Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Denise Salcedo, how are we doing?
We're doing great. Glad to be back.
We have to stop meeting like this because people will talk. It's been at least twice, at least twice in a year.
We're going to get the rumors started. Oh no, Denise and Tom are spending too much time together.
Funny enough, like when I went home this past weekend to see my mum and dad, like they keep vague tabs on what I'm doing. And my dad was like, who's that bloody American woman you were talking about yourself and wrestling with? So
stop it.
Seriously.
Your dad watched?
Seriously.
Well, hi dad. How's it going?
My dad will be delighted.
Here's from the American
that.
Girl.
My dad will be delighted with that. He will do. Out of interest, I'm keen to know, because I'm basing this on what I saw on your Twitter a while ago. You know how you are the busiest person of all the
yes.
times. And I noticed that you had like a schedule that you keep, like a physical schedule, a timetable of things. What color is the square which says Tom Campbell in? I'm just intrigued.
Oh, okay. So that one you can't see right now because
right.
it is pasted on my desk. But right now you're in white. But as soon as I'm done with this, you're going to be highlighted in orange. And the reason you're orange is because this week is all black and orange because I'm trying to get into the Halloween mood. So everything is color coordinated. And just a little tiny glimpse here for all of your viewers. I color coordinate every weekly schedule. And hand do every single week. So this is this year. These are the weeks that have passed. And my goal is to keep them going for the rest of the year. And then at the end of the year, see like everything that I did. So right now you're gonna be in orange.
I'm delighted to be in orange. Because there's something about having it like, because we all put stuff down on computers and write stuff down on screens. There's something quite nice about having something physically written down, isn't there?
I can't do digital. I cannot. I tried it. I got like a program. I downloaded. I made a little schedule. I even color coordinated it on there. I can't stick to it. Like I need to have it written down. So now my desk is just full of like a bunch of like, you know, different notes that I have on here. I'll like write post-its and stuff. And it's really the best way to kind of keep tabs. But I also have a whiteboard too. And the whiteboard is like a really good visual. And then in the bottom, I have like I have two paper whiteboards. Boards as well. So I have the one where you could do the dry erase markers and then the ones where you have the permanent marker. It's the whole thing.
The commitment to it is incredible. But that's simply because you become so busy. And we want to break down sort of how we got to where we are today. And we're going to do so whilst talking about three wrestling matches that you would watch while stranded on a desert island. So Denise, we're going to start with your first one. What's your first one going to be?
So I do have a question. Do I start with my favorite one or does it matter like the order that I do?
Order is not important on this one. You can start with whichever one. Some people like to do it chronologically. So they go from the oldest match to the newest match. Sometimes people like have different beats that they want to hit with certain matches. So it's completely up to you. However you wish to manifest it, it is your call.
Okay, so I'm actually going to start off with my favorite wrestling match ever. And I kind of feel like it's my favorite wrestling match because like it really is one of those matches that I can just rewatch over and over again. So my first pick is from January 10th, 2005, Ring of Honor, New York City, Kenta Kobashi versus Samoa Joe. That is my favorite match period. And I love it so much. And today I started to rewatch it because I've seen it a bunch of times, whatever, but it had been a good amount of time that has gone by since I seen it. And part of me was a little scared. I was worried. I was like, oh my God, this is the match that, you know, it's my favorite match. What if I go back and I watch it and it sucks, right?
That could happen.
I went back and I was very, very nervous. I rewatched it and I was even thinking like, maybe I'll just watch a little bit of it, you know, so that, I'm good, right? Just a little refresher. I ended up watching the entire thing and I still had these moments of, oh, you know, those kind of reactions. So thank God it lived up to its expectations that I built in my head from what I had remembered.
Now, as I'm a wrestling fan of a certain vintage, I remember this match first time round and how important it was, because it was like Ring of Honor had kind of risen from the ashes of a wrestling industry and they were becoming like sort of almost de facto the second big company, because they were doing it in a really classy way where they were becoming the wrestling company and it was all about the technical excellence. And there was something about, like, they were already gathering momentum, but there was something about Kobashi turning up and giving that seal of approval that made everybody go, oh, Ring of Honor are a big deal. They're a big deal.
Yes. And like, even okay, so I should probably give a little bit of some background information. So, you know, this match did happen in 2005, but I was kind of late to, you know, to going in and watching Ring of Honor. So what happened to me is like, I grew up a WWE fan. Like, that's essentially how I grew up watching wrestling. And by 2005, I was already attending like independent wrestling events. I was already going to PWG. But aside from that, I still really wasn't completely like branching out. So I watched this match like 2 years after it actually happened, which is kind of like the interesting part of it, because I ended up going down like this rabbit hole where that's when I started, you know, discovering, you know, different wrestlers, different people that I hadn't been aware of, because again, I grew up a WWE fan. So I kind of went down this like rabbit hole of like Samoa Joe matches, Ring of Honor matches in general. And that's how I ended up finding this one. So I didn't watch live. Like, this is something that I watch afterwards. So it's pretty cool, like, in my opinion, to like find out that my favorite match wasn't even something that I watched in the moment, and that even then it held up, and even now years later it has definitely held up. And as today, as I was like watching it, I was remembering like why I liked it, and I kind of feel like the reason why it's special to me is that I almost feel like it was the like catalyst of me starting to kind of change the type of wrestling styles that I saw myself, you know, sort of interested in. I think this is one of the matches where it kind of made me see wrestling in a different light than I had been seeing it before. So I kind of feel like it's special to me in that way.
Is there a moment from that match you mentioned there about a few times where, like, even now you're kind of bracing whilst watching it? Is there a moment from that match that stands out to you?
Okay, so there's a moment where Kobashi is like literally like just chopping the hell out of Samoa Joe. Okay, cool. But then he kind of like for a split second, his hand gets like a little tired, right? And for that split second, he senses it. Everybody watching the match senses it. And then he kind of goes like, can we curse on here?
Yeah, go for it.
Okay, so he kind of has like this like F that moment, and then he
I like how you ask him a curse and then you still go F.
I kind of want to curse on the show.
I really hope you go, can we curse on this? Yeah, go on. I'm fiddlesticks.
I'm trying to clean up my reputation. So he's chopping him, right? He's chopping him, and then he has this moment where his hand gets tired, everyone senses it, and he goes, nah, like, I'm going to continue killing this guy. And then he picks up the pace, like he picks up the pace and the energy and the intensity in which he's chopping him. And I'm just, and then you sense this like wave of emotion from the crowd, because they're all like, oh, he kicked it up a notch, and we didn't even know he could kick it up a notch. And that's kind of like what we saw play out through like the entire match. And it was funny too, because like right in the beginning, you see Samoa Joe just like slap him and like piss him off. And it's kind of like, okay, you thought this was going to be one thing. Now this turned into like another thing. And even just within a couple of like moves, like they hadn't really even done much. Like the match had just started and people were already like going off, like, this is awesome and this and that. So it's a very intense match, which is why I like it so much.
You mentioned that at this time you were discovering wrestling, you were a WWE kid. Can you remember what turned you on to wrestling in the first place?
Okay, so, I mean, I think I've said the story before, but it was my uncle who got me into wrestling. He was the one that grew up a wrestling fan. He was the one that would have it around the house. I would just kind of be, like, messing around where I would, like, he'd be watching wrestling, okay? And I just wanted to be the annoying kid, so I would literally just go in front of the TV, and I knew Stone Cold, right? Because everybody knew Stone Cold. And I would just go in front of the TV and, like, do, like, the middle fingers and just, like, block his view of the TV, and he'd get so pissed. He'd be like, Denise, move out of the way. And I'd be like, ha-ha, ha-ha, like, I'm blocking your TV, you can't watch wrestling. But then he ended up getting his first job. We didn't have DVR back then, so I would record the videos. Yeah, I would record on VHS videos Monday Night Raw. So that's how I started watching, because I would go in and, you know, I had nothing to do, so I'd just press record and I'd stay there. So the first couple of times I left, like, I would click record and I'd leave and do something else. But then I ended up kind of sticking around, and I ended up, like, kind of, you know, getting really interested in certain guys that I was seeing, like Chris Jericho, Kurt Angle, Triple H, like all of those people. I became a big Stephanie McMahon fan. And so that was kind of like when I started, once I started connecting to people and certain talents, that's what kind of like brought me into being a fan. But I think that during this period of like my WWE fandom, I was more in love with the show aspect of it. I was in love with the, you know, the drama and the stories and the characters versus, you know, once I, like I said, once I started, you know, discovering different types of promotions, when I started watching Impact Wrestling, when I started going to PWG, when I started, you know, going to different places and watching different stuff, was when I started to become more of a fan of the art form of wrestling. And so there was this like shift, and I think that was like once when I discovered this match, that's kind of where the shift happened in my fandom career.
when you say like you discovered a lot of the other matches, so was it the Kobashi Joe match that first made you realize, oh, there's a whole world out there?
No, it wasn't the first one. It wasn't the first one. Like, I had already been like watching other people. Like, I had been watching CM Punk matches in Ring of Honor. I had been watching, you know, Impact Wrestling matches. Like, I would go out and buy the DVDs and I would watch the shows on there, because I didn't really know. Like, I was not the person that knew where to go and find stuff. I found out about Daily Motion like really late. And so I would go into like the stores and actually buy the DVDs, and I would just watch what was on the DVDs. And so it wasn't until I started getting like on message boards where I made friends, and then I'd see people like, you know, meet friends and they send you links and stuff like that. And so that's kind of how I started discovering other people and other things. And once you discover a wrestler that you like, you end up kind of like following that person, and then all of a sudden you just end up down like a rabbit hole.
When you discover message boards, there's something quite special about that, because suddenly you got what you feel like is something that only really you're into, and people in the telly, all of a sudden, like there's loads more people in there. Which message board of choice would you normally hang around in, Denise?
So you know, that's funny. This is not your typical wrestling message board, but I was a big MySpace fan.
Nice. That's good.
MySpace was like my thing, and they had, I don't even remember, but they have like pages, like fan pages. So let's say you were a fan of CM Punk, right? Okay, you'd have the CM Punk fan page. So I was on there and I would see stuff. And then I discovered some other wrestling boards, and I wasn't like, I don't even remember what they were called. That's the thing. Like, I would just go on and like leave comments and stuff like that. And that didn't last too long. I kind of like wasn't there for as long. It was more for me. It was more of MySpace where I kind of developed like this, you know, community of friends where they would tell me things, and that's how I would essentially discover other things.
I think there's a whole generation that missed out completely on the glory that is MySpace.
Yes. I remember like decorating my MySpace profile.
What did you have on yours? Talk us round it. Talk us round your MySpace profile.
It was terrible. So it was like very colorful. And then if you remember, there was like categories, like sections where you can add like your favorite people, your favorite this, your favorite that. I had all of these pictures of like all my favorite wrestlers. So you would go on my page and you would keep scrolling and scrolling and scrolling, because it would be like, I would format it to be like so long because I wanted to include everybody that I liked. Then I started blogging on there too. So that was like my first glimpse of blogging too.
So that was where you started your, because I mean, you go on to do broadcast journalism at college, But would this have been whilst you were doing that, or was this something that kind of gave you a taste for it?
No, this was just something that I did for fun. Like, no, I didn't think anything of it. Like, I didn't even think like, hey, this might be something. No, I was just like messing around and like blogging like dumb stuff. I wrote, like, I remember being so hurt when Kurt Angle left WWE, because like I was such a big Kurt Angle fan and such a big WWE fan. I wrote like an entire blog about how depressed I was that Kurt Angle left. And it was like, it's such a, like, I was a little kid, you know? So like my blog was so dumb, but all that stuff's like gone now and disappeared. And yeah, so I kind of just, it was just for fun.
Who can you remember who your top eight were?
Yeah, it was, number one was Taylor Swift.
Nice.
And then my other ones were my friends from school.
Taylor Swift.
I didn't have any wrestlers. Yeah, I didn't have any wrestlers on my top eight.
But Taylor Swift has been a bit of a divine constant in your life anyway, hasn't she?
Since I was 14 years old. It's been a long, long time.
What was the first Taylor Swift song that you heard?
The first one that I heard was Teardrops on My Guitar, but the song that made me a fan was Our Song.
Nice. What is it about Taylor Swift? And well, you know, we're kind of going off on random tangents here, but I quite like it. Let's just pull the string and see where we go. Why Taylor Swift among everybody else?
She's my hero. I don't know how to explain it. You know, when you connect to somebody and you just love every single thing about them. When I first listened to her first album, her self-titled debut album, Taylor Swift, I listened to it, and for the first time in my life, I felt like someone actually understood me and spoke about things that you don't talk about with anybody, because it was just this like real raw like connection that she has with her listeners, where she really pours out her feelings. And it's kind of like, oh, I didn't know other people felt this way. And so that was really what kind of got me to connect with her. And then as, you know, she got older and I got older, it was kind of like her albums would mature as you know, the years went through. And so almost every time a new album would come out, somehow, some way, it would connect to what was going on in my life during that time. And so I always kind of had this like growth. So I've been like growing with Taylor Swift, and she's only like 2 years older than me. So it's, you know, it was always just there, but I just think she's like she's a businesswoman. She's so smart. And she's like, I know a lot of people like to say terrible things about her, but she's like such a good person. And I just like, oh, I just love her so much. She's my hero.
There's something to be said, like you said, like a businesswoman and somebody who's kind of very much found their own noise and found their own sound. And with yourself going to do broadcast journalism, I mean, the wrestling thing wasn't something that was in your plans. So what were the plans, Denise? What was it?
What was the plan? My plan when I went into broadcast journalism was to actually be a news anchor. So I thought I was going to go, you know, down to a small market in some middle of nowhere, you know, place in the United States and, you know, essentially report from there. But as I was, you know, doing that, I ended up doing local news in Pasadena here, like nearby. And I hated it. I would go to like city council meetings and they were so boring. And I just started thinking to myself, I don't care. Like, I know I'm supposed to care about this stuff because it's important and, you know, community and all of that stuff, but I didn't care. I had no interest in it whatsoever. And so that's essentially why I decided this wasn't for me. And then everybody that I would talk to, they would tell me things like all of the people that I used to work with that were like, I was shadowing, that were supposed to be like mentors. They were so mean. They were like, you don't have the voice to be doing news. You don't have the personality to be doing news. And then I started thinking, you know what? They're right. I do not have the voice to do news, and I do not have the personality to do news. And you know what? I don't have the interest to do news. And so that's when I really decided to go into the entertainment route. That's always the route that I wanted to go in, but I didn't think that I could. I thought I had to do news first. And they kind of lie to you in school. They make you think you have to do news first. So let's say you're a guy and you want to do sports. Like, they tell you, oh, you got to do news first. And then you go into sports. Like, nah, just go in and do what you want. That's the one thing that I wish they would tell you in school. But I think because
historically, it's good to you have that grounding in journalism. I think it's incredibly important. So I think a lot of people kind of set up camp as like sports YouTubers and wrestling YouTubers that don't have that understanding of things like libel and things like that, and things that probably, especially after the last 12 months, where you know, there's been some pretty awful things talked about in wrestling, but also you have to see it from the legal standpoint, and there's been a matter of times where you see people who don't have that. So I get why there is that push to get people to do the broadcast journalism bit first. But yeah, at the same time, like yourself, you're down in Pasadena and you're being told you're not going to make it, kid. And it's, did you ever get disheartened by that? Did you ever buy into people that were saying you're not going to do it?
Oh yeah, my news director. So I was like, I had dyed my hair blonde. You know, I was young, I was experimenting and all of that. And she pulls me to the side one day and she just says to me, she's like, Denise, I need to be honest with you. And I'm like, yeah. She's like, you're not glamorous. You're not a glamorous girl. You need to change your hairstyle because it doesn't match your eyebrows. And if you want to be blonde, you need to be blonde the entire time and do the entire thing. She's like, it doesn't look good on you. You need to go back to your natural hair color and you need to be more glamorous. And I would get that so much. I went into like hosting class too, because I've taken so many hosting classes to, you know, just get better. And my teacher, I went in with this like really cute outfit. It was like this like plaid dress, and I had like a cute little like hairstyle, you know, pink lipstick and, you know, pink blush and all of this, you know, looking very youthful. So I go into my hosting class and I'm doing like my, you know, my bit, I'm doing my assignment. And then she says to me, she's like, my instructor, she looks at me and she's like, Denise, you're never gonna get hired anywhere because you look too young. No one's ever going to take you seriously. And you cannot wear pink. I stopped wearing pink for years. She told me you can't wear pink because it just makes you look way too younger, way more younger. And she's all, you need to make your voice sound a lot deeper. And so throughout these like years, one of the things that I've been working on so much is my voice. And I still have a very high pitched voice, because that's just what it is. But it's gotten so much deeper, like when you compare it to like past me. And so it was one of those things where like you would be told constantly, like, this is not, you need to be sexier, you need to look older, you need to present this, you need to do that. And so many people tell you so many different things, and something that could be satisfying for one person, it's not satisfying for another person. And so you really have to have like this thick skin and realize like, okay, they're telling me these things, and yeah, they hurt and they're not fun to hear, but it's going to get you to be better. And so immediately after that hosting class, when she told me all of those things, I called my friends that, you know, I feel had a good grasp on how to look older. And they were like, okay, this is what we're going to do, Denise. We're going to, you know, you're going to start wearing red lipstick. You're going to start doing eyeliner. You're going to start dressing differently, get rid of the pink, no florals. And so I completely changed into like this solids look and like more serious colors. But it was just one of those things that like there's a lot of up and downs when you're pursuing a career in like in media, whether you want to do entertainment or whatever it is that you want to do. There's so much ups and downs.
I think a lot of it as well, and historically it's been a gender thing as well. Like you've had conversations in your time that like I haven't had, and that I know is down to gender. That's just down to the position that I was born in. And do you see that? Do you see a shift in that since you started? That there's more opportunity? Do you feel like, because I know we say there's more, but do we really think there is?
See, that's the thing. And this has always been for me a complicated topic, because, you know, as a woman, obviously people are always going to be like, oh, you know, or like, you know, is there more opportunity for women? This and that, this and that. But when I came into this, because I was a girl, I didn't think anybody was going to care. I thought, well, no one's going to take me seriously. You know, I'm already told you don't have the voice for this. You look too young. And so I'm thinking, how the hell am I going to break into pro wrestling when people don't take me seriously? And so that's like the thing that you really have to, I feel as a girl, you have to do is make sure people take you seriously. And the only way the only reason why I'm at the point that I'm at is because I did everything in my power to make people see me and take me more seriously. I did a million jobs that, you know, I didn't want to necessarily do, but I did them so that it can help me grow and help me do more. And I don't think if I would have done, I'll just be honest with you, if I would have done the bare minimum, I would not be where I was at right now. And that's what I don't think a lot of people understand, is that when you are a girl, You got to work harder. You cannot do the bare minimum. You got to work harder. You got to do more. And then it's so now like being in this position, my thing is like when I'm doing this job, I don't see myself as competing with other women. I don't see myself as competing with men. I see myself as competing with the very best. Whoever the very best is, whether it's a man or it's a woman, I'm competing against that person, and I'm going to, you know, do my best to compete against that person. Even I feel like if you, because there aren't so many women in wrestling media, if I were to just say, oh, I'm just competing with the women, it would never, my career would never go to that next level. You got to compete with the very best. And right now the very best are the men, because they, you know, that's just how it is in this field. And so you got to go in with that mentality. So, and if you do not go in with that mentality, if you go in with the mentality of, oh, I'm a woman, and because I'm a woman, I deserve these opportunities. No, you got to work extra harder. You got to just realize that that's just the way it is. Work extra harder. If you really want it, you'll get it. And the next thing you know, you're competing with the men who are at the very top.
And you're somebody that pushed away from that, from the station in Pasadena that told you no, and you found a way into the wrestling industry. And I want to talk about how you did after we get your second match, Denise. So we've had Samoa Joe and Kenta Kobashi from Ring of Honor. What would you like your second one to be, Denise?
All right, here we go. This one's a little bit more recent, but here it is. Okay, so Homecoming 2019, Impact Wrestling, Impact Tag Team titles on the line. Santana and Ortiz, LAX versus the Lucha Brothers. Okay, so this match for me, I think really just kind of, well, first of all, I was already like a big fan of LAX, but this was the match that made it for me, where I was like, that's it. They're my favorite tag team. I'm done. That's it. I've made a decision. They're my team, whatever. Right. And this match for me just kind of really made me fall in love with tag team wrestling. I was always a fan of tag team wrestling. You know, I grew up a fan of the Hardy Boys, of Edge and Christian and all of that. Right. But it wasn't until I really like this match for me, it's what did it. It made me such a big fan of tag team wrestling. And it just kind of like, I don't know. It was just such a great match. And I rewatched it again today in the morning. I rewatched all my matches today in the morning. And I was watching it and I was just like, man, these guys really went toe to toe with each other. And that's the thing that we all know, you know, seeing the Lucha Brothers, we all know the type of speed in which they work and, you know, how fast they move about in their matches. So to see, you know, Santana and Ortiz, like, I feel they're the, like, one of the only teams that can keep up with them in terms of that speed. And they did. And you see that in this match. It's so funny because even commentary, like at one point, they're like trying to call the match, right? But the action in the ring is moving so fast that like even themselves, they have to like speed up just to try to like, you know, get everything that they can that's happening in this match. It was one of those don't blink matches. And I think that's what I really loved about it, was the fact that it kind of went down as, like, to me, in my opinion, one of the best tag team matches I've ever seen.
Impact Wrestling is it's one of those promotions that they've been around for so long. They've outlived WCW at this point. And, you know, they're kind of, you know, I feel like if the world blew up, there'd be cockroaches and Impact Wrestling and nothing else. And they just keep on keeping on. And with what they're doing now, especially now they're connected with AEW, I think it's amazing for them to be in the mix. Do you feel like Impact, you know, somebody like yourself who's so knowledgeable in the wrestling, is there something that Impact need to do to kind of push a little bit further up? Because I feel like no matter what they do, like in terms of, and not in terms of the in-ring quality, because, you know, it's phenomenal. There's some amazing things. And as we always say, don't sleep on them. But in terms of like the cultural representation and like in and around the zeitgeist, it's always just here. It's always just here. What do they need to do?
So my thing is that I feel like Impact in a sort of way has always been underrated. I don't think they really get the credit that they deserve, because, you know, we're talking about in-ring work. When I go back and think of some of my favorite events that I've ever attended live, when I think of, you know, a lot of my favorite matches, a lot of the wrestlers that I feel just had their best work in Impact Wrestling, with Kurt Angle being one of those people. And, you know, just, you know, discovering AJ Styles, you know, his matches with Jerry Lynn there. Oh my God. It was fantastic. So I feel like they've had such good quality in-ring work. And I almost feel like that's not talked about enough. Now, in terms of what they need to do different, this is the thing, is like when they were on Spike TV, like they were getting some good numbers on there. And I really like, oh my God, if they were still on Spike TV, I do think that the game would be totally different right now. The landscape of pro wrestling would be totally different. I think Impact Wrestling has what it takes. They've always had what it takes. I just think that they've been hurt by too many things. All of the network changes, I think that definitely, you know, really, I mean, they were, you know, Destination America, Pop TV, I mean, so many different channels. And then, you know, they're finally, you know, now, God, with Access, right? But it's never been at the same place where it was with Spike TV. And so I personally think that it's the network changes and all of that that has really hurt it. Also, they, you know, they create a lot of talent, right? But then all the talent is taken from WWE and it's taken pooled, you know, AEW takes it, WWE takes it. And that's great because you want the talent to grow. But obviously, you know, it does affect the brand to some extent. So it's one of those things where I feel like they've been hurt by several different factors where it's like they constantly have to be like rebuilding and all of that. But there's, I just think that there's work, the work rate that they have, I think it needs to be talked about more, their past matches.
If you hadn't picked Santana and Ortiz, and we talk about like great Impact Wrestling matches, what would have been like a close second place for you? Because again, this is the home of work rate. So
probably I'm going to go with like the AJ Styles, Jerry Lynn matches that I saw. And they had a series of matches, and those ones were the ones where I was just like hooked, man, like hooked. I would probably go there. And I mean, really anything that like I saw Kurt Angle do, you know, all the work that we saw with Samoa Joe. God, I remember going to Bound for Glory. God, when it was in, because I went to two, I went to Irvine and San Diego. The Irvine show was like crazy insane. Like that one was so good, top to bottom, like every single match. And like, I just remember really enjoying myself at that show. And so it's just kind of like, as a whole, I think they put on some really great shows top to bottom.
They really do. With getting you with your story, let's get back to you getting back into that world of wrestling. Everybody met, I think, if people who weren't aware of what you were doing got to know you when X-Pop got into the world of podcasting. So how did you get acquainted with Sean Waltman?
So I was already doing, you know, my entertainment work. I was doing that. So I'm always the person that's always looking for different opportunities. And I was in a Facebook group. It's a host in LA Facebook group. So it's for hosts in the Los Angeles area. And so they posted that, somebody posted a post basically saying that they were looking for females that were interested in wrestling. So I showed up and it ended up being AfterBuzz. And I saw that and I was kind of like, well, I guess I'll give it a try, right? I was like, oh, I'll do it. I say yes to everything. So I went, I showed up, I did it. And then I had known that X-Pac was, you know, had his podcast there because it was something that was talked about. And so I essentially one day, you know, I showed up because I was friends with one of the people that helped out on the podcast. And I showed up and essentially I got to meet Sean there. And he was just kind of like, he's a very nice guy. So like, if you meet him, he'll ask you questions about yourself. And so obviously I was like, oh, I'm such a big fan of yours. And I started telling him like about, you know, me being a fan. And then he started asking, like, he was curious. He started asking me, you know, questions and about, you know, my pro wrestling fandom. And so I started telling him and we kind of started talking. Then the following week, they had a interview with EC3 and he just like, they just told me like, you know, just, you know, hang around. Right. So the second week I show up and I'm thinking like, okay, their guest is EC3. I already knew in advance. So what I did was when I found that out, I prepared questions for EC3 and topics that I thought that they could ask them. And I showed up to the show. Keep in mind, I'm not on camera. I'm not part of the team. I just had questions. So the team that was already there were kind of, you know, working and preparing. And so I essentially just started giving the other members on the podcast my questions. And I said, here, like, go ask them this, this and that. Talk about this. Here are the questions. You know, here you go. Take it for you. And so whatever, right? And I'm just kind of like, I was just planning on watching the show from like the production area. And then they're about to go live. And then all of a sudden the producer and Sean are like, hey, come in here. And We're going to try you out. And I was like, what? I'm not even ready for this. What's happening here? You know, you guys are telling me this 5 minutes before you guys go on the air. And so they sat me down and they were just kind of like, okay, like, you know, just, you know, be you and don't feel like you have to try so hard, this and that. And I was like, okay, great. So I ended up asking all my questions that I had prepared, right? And then I, you know, whenever I saw an opportunity, I chimed in, I asked my questions, you know, blah, blah, blah. And then afterwards, later on that day, I got a DM from Sean and he was just like, I like you. We're going to keep you on. And I was like, okay. And that's how I got involved in the show. So it's just one of those things where I was prepared, even though I wasn't intending to be part of the show. I was prepared just in case I could offer anything, you know, just take initiative, right?
And that's it. And I think this, and this is what I love about what you do. And I think this is something that so many people can learn. Is it's taking that initiative and being aware of what's around you. Like nobody told you to prep questions, but you went, I'll probably just do that. And it's just, I see so much of this when I watch what you do. You're clearly somebody who's just clued into everything. And what gets me is there's so many people who want to do the things that you do, but they miss the basic stuff, which is all about using your initiative. And it's not, it's just, it's working that little bit harder and working that little bit smarter, which is what you do. Like little things. It's like joining an LA hosts group, which gives you that in the first place. How is that? Like, I always, the assumption is always that like trying to get sort of hosting work and presentation work in LA is really dog eat dog. Like that's the vibe that you get because everybody is there. Like every waiter that serves you is trying to star in a blockbuster. And is that the case? Is that a bit of misinterpretation from people over here?
So I don't know how to put this, but it's very, very competitive. You have a lot of entertainment aspect of it. You have a lot of really gorgeous women that are competing for these spots. So you really have to be prepared. You have to go above and beyond. I was working with this company, which was called Red Carpet Report. And it was funny because I worked with them for 5 years. Okay. And for 5 years, get this, I worked, they were one of a bunch of companies that I worked with, right? But they were one that I essentially took away from. Like I saw an opportunity there, right? For 5 years, I worked for free for them. 5 years. Okay. And a lot of the other girls did too. Now, here's the thing about that is that afterwards, once when I was essentially ready to go on and move on and do something else with my life, right? My boss told me that he kept a spreadsheet of all of the people that, all of the hosts that he's had, all of the events that they covered. And keep in mind, this is 5 years later. I find out that I essentially was in the triple digits of events that I would cover for the company.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
To all the other people on his roster that wanted to be reporters. And even though I wasn't getting paid, even though I was, you know, having to work all of these extra jobs. I didn't care. I showed up, I did the events, and I ended up doing more than anybody else, which was how I was able to, you know, just get better. But it was really just of, you know, you have to be reliable. If you're reliable and if people know that you're reliable and you're willing to do the work, they'll keep calling you back. That's the thing. So like I started doing like the bottom of the barrel events, like things I didn't even care about, but I did them because I needed somebody. And then as I kept going, they kept giving me better and better and better events. And then during those events, I basically used that opportunity to network with other people that were there. So I would meet other people that ran, you know, different networks and stuff. And that's when I started getting paid work. So by my second year of hosting, my first year in hosting, I didn't make any money at all. And it wasn't until my second year of hosting where I finally started to make money. And, you know, but that took a lot. I had to go and network with people. I had to, you know, apply to a million different places. And also what helped too was that I learned everything. So if you learn how to edit, you learn how to run camera, you learn how to self-shoot, you learn how to host, you learn how to ask questions, all of that. So basically what they would do, people would hire me and have me do everything. So they wouldn't have to hire a cameraman. They wouldn't have to hire an editor. So they saw, okay, this person could do it all. So great, let's hire her. Obviously they save a lot of money and they hire me to do the events. And that's how essentially how I would do it. And so I kind of just did that for like several years and I would just take work wherever I could. And it kind of was cool because I ended up doing and working with so many different people. And within that, you end up meeting people. And every time you meet somebody, it leads to something else. Like all my jobs that I've ever had lead to something else, something even better.
It's so important that when you get those things, and it is tough when you're doing it for free. I did radio for like 6, maybe 7 years for free because you just want to get in. And it's finding that opportunity whenever you're doing it to speak to somebody else and network, and it's maximizing those moments. During those years, then those 5 years where you're grafting, you're plugging away and you're doing everything, how often does the thought come around about is this worth it? Are we getting there? Does that come around?
Every day.
Because I think this is important, because I think what people were really keen for us to talk, right? Because we're both very positive people. We genuinely both are. And I think that, you know, I'm proud to be put in that box with yourself. But it's one of those where there's also those days where you are just completely worn down by it.
Yeah, it's hard.
And you say it every day. And every day when you did those 5 years, it was just like, is this worth it? Are we doing, or is this worth bothering?
So every day it was constant me applying to places and just constant rejection. No, no, no. Auditions, I hate auditions. They're terrible. They like really, I'm not good at auditioning. I'm the kind of person that's good once I'm on the job. Auditioning, I'm terrible. I get so nervous. I start to overthink everything. And so then I really screw myself, right? Screw myself out of these jobs. And you have no idea how many times I audition someplace. And here's the thing, I'm the person who really wants it. So when I make myself extra nervous. When you really want it, you make yourself extra nervous. And so I would be really terrible at these auditions, right? But every audition that went bad, I'd go home crying the entire drive, my 1 hour drive, you know, go home crying. And then I would get home and, you know, apply to jobs and people would either ignore you, send you automatic rejection notices, or they'd start to interview you and then they'd go, oh, no, we're going a different direction. And it was just one of those things where it's like, oh my God, what can I do? Like, what can I do for someone to finally say yes to me? And so it was just a lot of that. But the reason why I kept going was because every time I, you know, did an interview, I covered an event, I did, whenever I had success, it felt so good to have that success that I kept seeking it. See, you get me, you know exactly what I'm talking about.
It's an addiction. You're addicted to the endorphins that come from, you know, like when I've hosted events and you come off stage and you are just, you're running on adrenaline still, even afterwards, no matter what the event is, you come off and the adrenaline's pumping. You don't sleep for hours afterwards. And that's what you always live for. You can, in the build up to it, you can forget that. But when you're in it and when you finish it, when it's done, Like, God, there's the endorphins are ridiculous.
100%. That is exactly what I experienced, where it was like, when it was good, it was really good. When it was bad, it was bad.
Oh, it's bad. It's soul crushing. You just want to give everything up and become a postman. Like, it's soul crushing.
And I even thought, like, I had serious conversations with myself and friends where I would be like, you know, is there something else that I can do? Is there something else that I want to do? And I just couldn't find it anyplace else. And I, you know, my shoot jobs, I worked as a brand ambassador. So in Los Angeles, you know, obviously it's a huge city, huge, you know, metropolitan area. So many events. So I worked as a brand ambassador for 7 years. So that was the way that I essentially funded this dream. And I had just about every job that you can think of. I was a person on the street holding up a sign so you can get free tacos. Like, I was flipping pancakes. I was, you know, telling people to taste wine, you know, all of these different things. And so in those jobs, I got really good opportunities to do other things, to take on other roles. You know, I was doing event management, event planning too, and I developed some really good relationships there. And all of those were fun, but they did not make me happy. They didn't make me happy. Like, yeah, I was getting paid, but I wasn't happy. And then the stuff that I was happy doing, I wasn't getting paid. So it was this like really weird balance, but, you know, just kind of kept going. And you just got to find what is really meant for you. And I think if you keep going, eventually you find it.
That's just to drop back to it. So when you do an audition that doesn't go well and you stay there, you're driving away and you're crying your eyes out because you're heading home and it's not gone well. What puts you back on the horse?
So I have a rule. I have this very, very like rule like that I apply to my life all the time. And I've kind of had it for like years, like, and it's a rule that I feel is a good one for me. Whenever I'm sad, I only allow myself like, a couple of hours of sadness. So it depends on the level of sad, right? So I can give myself an hour to be sad. I can give myself the rest of the evening to be sad, but the following day I'm not allowed to be sad anymore. And I just take it all away. I don't know how to explain it. I get rid of it. I get rid of all of it. And I just put myself in this mentality of really, I do not like feeling sadness. I do not like feeling anger. I only like feeling like happiness and that. So I always try to find the positive in everything. I try to find, you know, the happiness in everything. Because I mean, at the end of the day, like, we live one life, right? Like, I'm not going to go and like beat myself up over something that, let's be real, in a couple of years is not going to matter. And I started thinking about that. I was like, okay, I would beat myself, like even years before, I would beat myself up over, you know, some insignificant things. And then it wouldn't matter to me then. So I knew that the stuff that I was worrying about now wouldn't matter in 5 years or whatever. And so I'm like, why am I hurting myself? Not like hurting myself, but like, why am I mentally torturing myself when I don't need to do that? And like, even now I try to tell myself that too, because, you know, obviously we all want to be at a different level. We all want to be at a different spot. And so I, you know, sometimes I start to get that way and I'm like, nope, nope. You got to take that all away. You can't be like that, because every time, and this is my big thing. This is a big lesson that I've learned. Every time that I spend energy feeling sorry for myself or feeling sorry for lack of opportunities or all of this, all this wasted energy could have been me maybe making a video, maybe me reaching out to somebody for an interview. It could have been time that I could have used for something else instead of like crying or, you know, just, you know, making myself depressed, you know, all of that. Like, you can use your energy in an entirely different direction. And that's been something that, and it's not easy to do. It's not easy. You got to be working on it and you got to find things that help you. Like for me, it's music. Music will help me. I will listen to music. I'll listen to songs that are like inspirational or that I find inspiration in, right? Or, you know, even watching a movie, like watching inspirational movies. Oh, those could do it for you too. And like, all of a sudden you're like, all right, I feel good again. You know, you got to re-energize yourself.
With the whole idea of like blocking out time just to go, I'm going to be okay. And because then if you go, right, there's no way I can get over this. I can't talk myself around from this. I can't, I have to be sad. So I'm going to do it. And I like how you schedule sad, like you schedule the rest of your day. Like
you schedule sadness.
You schedule sadness. And there's something about that I really like, because it's all about taking back control. Because the thing about when you're feeling sad, when you're feeling anxious, you're not in control. So for you, it's going, okay, I'm going to allow myself to feel that, but for this time and at this point. And there's something quite empowering about that.
I'll give you a perfect example. So this March, I was rejected by my dream job, the job that I had been working so hard to get. And I think you could probably know what job that I'm talking about here, but I was rejected.
Okay. I think I know. Well, if you want to tell me when we're off, you can, but I think I know. You,
I was rejected by WWE and I was very, very, very sad about it. Okay. I was very upset.
How close did you come?
I was applying, it was a 6-month process.
Okay.
So it was.
Are we 6 months into the process when they said no?
Yes.
Right. Okay.
So for 6 months prior, so from December 2020 to March 2021, I was in the process. Right. And so during that time, I was, I had like 7 interviews. I had 7 interviews. I had, I created content. I appeared on watch alongs, all of that stuff, right? It's created videos from scratch, et cetera. It was a 6-month process of basically waiting and waiting and okay, we're going to have you do this now. We're going to have you do this now. And I was like, okay, I'm doing it. I'm doing it all. And then you're down to the final 4. Great. And here I am. Okay. You're down to this. And you know, I have friends in places. So they would tell me, you know, some of the feedback that they would hear. And so like, so during the 6-month process, it was kind of just like very, very, when you're waiting for someone to give you an answer, you're kind of a little bit on edge. Okay. Like you're like, God, like what, I don't know what else I could do. Like I've done just about it all. And so it was on a Friday. I got the call and they're basically like, the team loved you, whatever. I don't think they loved me that much or they wouldn't have given me the job. Right. But they were like, the team loved you, but we've decided to go in a different direction. We still want to have you do stuff with us, but blah, blah, blah. And I was kind of like, okay. And that was kind of it. I didn't ask any questions. I didn't say anything. And then I just like broke down crying. And it was just like this very, very, the darkest place I'd ever been in. Cause I thought, oh my God, I did everything possible. Everything. Nobody's doing what I'm doing. If anything, I went above and beyond. My interviews were great. Everything was great. You start to play back everything that you did. Right. And so I just thought like, what the hell did I do wrong? I started questioning everything about myself. And so finally, like I allowed myself to be sad that Friday, that Saturday, that Sunday, it kind of went a little longer than I was expecting.
This is a long timetable of sad today.
Yes, it was not. And here's what I did too. And this is very, I don't know if this is like a bad thing, but this is what I did. I took a picture of when I was really, really sad. I took a few pictures because I was just in a bad place. I took a picture so that I could remember what that was like. So every time I decide, I don't know. It's kind of like a motivational thing.
Yeah.
I will tell you by that Monday that went. Okay. So by that Monday, I was out sending people emails. I was emailing people. By Wednesday, I was already making all of these like business decisions. And like by the end of the week, I had like a bunch of new jobs.
There you go. And
so it kind of lit a fire, you know?
Yeah. And it's when stuff like that happens, when you get bounced back like that, it was one of those things where there may not be enough that you could have done for what the criteria that they wanted. And it's never a fail. It's not a failing in you. If you did everything you could, sometimes they just go, and it's just, and right. It's frustrating because it goes, and you know all this anyway, but it's frustrating because all you're left to do is put eyes on yourself and go, what did I do wrong? Why didn't I fit the bill there? What was wrong with what I did? But then like, it's you came around and you talked yourself around, but then like the closest I've come with stuff like that is in radio. I was up for a national radio award a few years ago, and I get down to the final 3 and I don't get it. And I remember just being like devastated by it. But then there's my dad on my phone just going, bloody hell, you're the top 3 in the country. That's amazing. Like, we're so proud of you back here. Like, and you forget, and you kind of lose sight of that a little bit. And when you kind of do the big picture and you go, well, like, you know, there's Denise, who was not many years ago being told at a local TV network, you ain't going to make it. And then here you are, like, having conversations with WWE, like being in that field, like, even, okay, it didn't pan out the way you wanted it to, but man, what an experience, what a drive, what a thing to happen. And and it's taking stuff from that. And I think that's probably what, that's what being positive is about, isn't it? It's not so much about, it's not so much about always everything being great, but it's sort of learning to dance in the rain a little bit.
Exactly. And like, that's the, like, I think you said, like, the key word there is like the big picture. You have to look at the picture, big picture. Mm-hmm. And I'm so bad at that. Thankfully, I'm surrounded by people that can help me with that. And it really is true. And like, now, like, it's crazy, but like, even now, like, that day, that weekend, I thought it was like the worst thing ever. And I thought my life was a disaster and all of this. And then it was just like, so many things changed from that point on. And I almost feel like everything worked out for the better, you know, it was like, it worked itself out. And I just think, like, you know, things are meant to be, if things are meant to be for you, they're meant to be. And I'm a huge believer in destiny and that everyone is destined for something. Like, that's just my, you know, train of thought. And so, like, everything has just been like, obviously it requires a lot of work, you know, but it's like, you just figure things out and they get better. Like, I'm almost like thankful for that, because like, yeah, I'm not, you know, I got rejected from my dream job, et cetera, but yet I'm still doing all of these interviews. And now I'm not just tied into like one company. No, I'm working with all of these other companies to, you know, interview their talent, et cetera. And, you know, I finally was able to purchase my first apartment. Earlier this year, I couldn't afford an apartment. That was not going to happen. And so, you know, it finally happened. And that happened 2 months after that rejection. And that's, you know, that's how fast, you know, things happen. But it's been very interesting. And the cool thing was, the fun part for me is that, like, I have a lot of people that, like, that work for the company, and they'll come up to me and be like, I'm a big fan of yours. And I'm like, what are you talking about?
But that's it. Cause that's, you're out there now, you know? And I think no greater example of your work ethic was watching, it was around SummerSlam and the sheer amount of videos that you put up. And I don't know whether enough people give credit where credit is due, is that you're a one woman army, in the sense that you were doing the interview, you were setting up the camera on the tripod, getting the interview, right, start the recording, get, you know, next one, find somewhere with Wi-Fi, edit, done, online, and that's all you. And
I think about it.
and then you do all the social, you know, the social back end of it and all that stuff, and that's all you. And I want to make sure that gets the credit that it deserves, because that's a true example of graft and grind and going, okay, I'm doing this on my own. I can either complain about the fact that this is a lot to do for one person, or I can just go, what an amazing opportunity. This is how we're going to do it. This is how we're going to make it happen. You know?
Exactly. And it made me happy. It made me so happy, like, being there, like, you know, even afterwards,
yeah,
like,
what an amazing
after everything.
Experience.
Right. And it was just like, it was just so cool. And then, you know, like, even like hearing some of the talent, like, they would be like, oh yeah, like, I know you, like, I'm a fan of you. Or like Rhea Ripley on camera, she was like, I watch you on YouTube. I'm like, what the heck? Like, this is wild. And like, I've had, like, you know, a couple of other people too that were like, oh yeah, like, I know you, this and that. And it was so weird. Just the other day I was interviewing Chelsea Green for the first time, and she was like, I feel like I know you already. And I'm like, what? Like, this is the first time we're meeting. Like, it's crazy. And so, like, yeah, like, that was hard and all of that. And, you know, things are still going to be hard. You know, I'm still facing rejection every day. It's fine, whatever, right? You just got to keep going. You just got to keep working and just got to stay positive. Allow yourself to be sad, though. Honestly, like, allow yourself to be sad. Like, crying is fine. You got to let it out. And then you just got to move on. Just last night I was crying to my fiance for like a whole hour.
I like how excitedly you say that. Oh, I was crying last night, actually.
Yeah, I was like happy to, like, I was like, I'm having a breakdown, I don't know what to do. I was,
what were you crying about? What were you crying about?
Well, this sounds dumb, but it was not dumb to me, you know. I was crying because I didn't know what to do with my YouTube channel, and I didn't know which direction to go in. And I started moving one direction, and then I was like, nope, that's not the right direction. But then I was basically weighing the pros and cons, and like, I broke down and I was like, I made a mistake. I shouldn't have done this. I shouldn't have done that. And then, like, you know, obviously it takes somebody that's not, you know, crumbling down and their whole world's not falling apart for them to paint you and the big picture, you know? And so it was just kind of funny because I was just like, yeah, that what happened last night.
But I think that's important to have that around you. Like my good lady's very much that for me, in the sense that if, you know, you can get stuck in your own head sometimes and stuff. And I've always, a lot of my family, when we don't talk that much about stuff that's going on. We just don't. It's not just not something we do. But Alex is a real talker, and her family talk about stuff all the time. And Alex has brought that out in me. And even if something's stupid, at least it feels stupid in my own head. It's learning to go, this is why I feel sad now, and just say it. And for her, and then it'll be Alex going, okay, do you, and then as soon as you say it, and I don't know whether you're the same, as soon as the words fall out of your mouth that are making you sad, you kind of look at them in your hand and go, just, that's not really worth being sad about, maybe.
It is so true. And it's so nice to have somebody to basically just kind of like, even just talking though, like even just saying out loud, like, I feel sad and this is why. Even there's therapy in that, honestly.
There really is. It's important to talk, is the thing. And it's a bit of a cliche that we use a lot when we had mental health things, like, you know, DMs are always open, always good to talk, but it genuinely is. It's helped me every single time to do that. I don't know how long I've got you for, because I know how wildly busy you are.
Oh, I'm here for whatever time you need me.
Cool. Because I wanted to ask you about your day, because like I'm fascinated by a day in the life of Denise Alcida, because you seem to do so many things. You wear so many different hats. And like, I know for a fact that when we're talking now, it's 11 in the morning and you've already said, I did a video for WrestleTalk. I also watched the matches back that I did, and I did this. So I'm very aware you've probably been up for a while. So I'm just intrigued what a day for Denise looks like.
So every day is a little bit different, but I'll kind of give you like a rough outline. I wake up, I eat breakfast.
What time do you wake up?
Today? Oh, today I woke up at 7.
7 o'clock. Okay.
Yeah, today I woke up at 7. So I woke up at 7. I had breakfast. Usually I'll have either a bagel or I'll have like egg whites and hash brown and a coffee. And then I come to my computer and I read my emails. I go through my social media. Then I, you know, clean up myself. I, you know, do the toiletry stuff. You know, I get ready for the day. I get dressed. I put my makeup on, clean my face, brush my teeth, all of that type of stuff.
Wipe hash brown off yourself.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And then usually what I'll do is I'll like follow up on emails. And then depending on what day it is, I basically have like something different every day. But what I normally do is I start off with like my videos. So like the videos that I have to create for the Sportster, like I'll do that. I'll kind of go and see like what news is on and what videos, what I can do a video on. Or maybe I have an interview. I've been having a lot of interviews in the morning. Like yesterday I had like, no, the day before yesterday I had. See, this is what I mean. The day before yesterday I had like 3 interviews and a show. Yesterday I was over at I was doing a home shopping stream yesterday, and then today I had the WrestleTalk show, and then this. So it's like every day's different, but so there's like a theme for each day. So but the first half of my day is usually doing interviews, creating content, sending emails, that type of stuff, sending stuff up. And then probably like around three, 4 o'clock is when I will do like errands, where I'll like clean the house and do stuff like that. And then at 4:40 is dinner time. 5 o'clock is watch wrestling. So that's Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, because those are the days I have shows, and Fridays. So every day except Thursday. Thursdays is my day, my evening to do other stuff. And then I watch the shows at 5. I live tweet throughout the shows. As soon as the shows are done, I come here, I do the live streams. After the live streams, I edit the audio, I write the little articles, and then I send it off, and then I promote the shows on social media, et cetera. And then after all that said and done, I make the schedule for the following day to see what I'm going to do for the following day so that I know what's going on. And then after that, I take a shower. And then after I take a shower, I go to bed and I watch TV. And there's always a different show that I'm watching.
It's a busy day. It's a full day. Yeah. Every day.
It's a full day.
It's even like the thing like setting your schedule for the next day. Like you're kind of already starting the next day, the day before.
Yes. Really. I make sure to like mentally play out the day like in my head so that I don't forget what I have to do.
What do you do with regards to burnout?
So like I was feeling a little tired this past weekend, actually, or maybe the week before that, because I had been doing a lot of traveling. I had done Las Vegas, Chicago, and all of that. So it really burned me out, man. Like I was tired. Honestly, I take a nap. It's like, if I got to take a nap, I got to take a nap. That's it. Like that's what needs to go down. Then that's what I'll do. Because I almost feel like I would feel so guilty whenever I take a nap. Like I feel guilty because I'm like, oh my gosh, that was like 3 hours. I could have done something. But I was actually, okay. So one of my people that I really look up to is Selena Gomez. And she she's like everywhere. Okay. She owns a business. She's got, you know, TV shows, music career, et cetera. I was reading an article where they ask her, what does she do to like, you know, relax and reset? She goes, I take a nap. And I was like, if Selena Gomez could take a nap, I could take a freaking nap. I was like, that's
it. Simple, but yeah, it's most people would say I'll do constructive yoga. I'll paint. I think nap is quite simple. I'll just have a nap.
A nap. Yeah. It really, really makes the day so much better. And I, you know, wake up and I'm like, all right, cool. I could continue on for the day.
Okay. So naps. So schedule naps, schedule sadness.
Schedule sadness, schedule naps. Watch TV. I love TV.
What are you watching at the moment that isn't? What are you watching at the moment that isn't wrestling?
The Morning Show on Apple TV with Jennifer Aniston and Reese Witherspoon.
Nice.
Only Murders in the Building with Selena Gomez and the Golden Girl reruns. That's the three shows that I'm currently watching right now.
I'm glad the Golden Girls are getting another run out. This is
it's
lovely to see. I got concerned because they're launching Peacock everywhere. So I'm terrified that we're going to end up getting it because I quite like the network, but I think that's going. But one of the things they've talked about with this this international rollout of Peacock, they said, oh, it's the Fresh Prince of Bel-Air. And I was like, oh, okay. So like this could be like Will Smith doing the Uncle Phil bit. And a reckless nephew turns up with hilarious consequences. No, it's just a dramatic reboot of The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air. And I don't know how I feel about it today.
I don't like reboots. Like, I haven't seen one reboot that I've honestly can say that I like. Like, I'm terrified when they do, like, my favorite shows. Like, I loved Gossip Girl. I started watching the reboot that they did. Oh, it was god awful. I stopped watching, like, within, like, 20 minutes.
You haven't watched Squid Game, then? Lots of people
I haven't yet, but people were telling me, oh, you got it, Denise, you got it. So I'm gonna.
Yeah. Okay. No spoilers for Squid Game. That's fine. We got one more match to get to before we do. One thing I like to do as a little surprise. It's nothing bad, I promise. We like to see, as well as taking three wrestling matches, you're allowed to take with you a movie, an album, and a luxury item. And the luxury item can be something of sentimental value. It can be a bit of tech. It can be something to keep you amused on the island. It can be whatever. But we'll get to that at the end. So if you're going to take a movie with you, Denise, what's the movie going to be?
Oh, dang. Oh, that's hard. One movie. I feel like I have to go with my favorite movie, The Phantom of the Opera. Nice. So I definitely have to go with that one. It has music, so I can listen to some different music while I'm, you know, watching the movie. One album. I have to go with
One Taylor Swift album.
I'm going to go with Reputation because that is my favorite Taylor Swift album, although it's going to hurt because I love all the other ones too, but I'm going to go with Reputation. And then for my luxury item, I'm going to go with my desktop because my desktop's bigger. So I'm taking the desktop.
Nice. Okay. So so you can carry it. So that means you'll carry on grafting while you're there.
Yeah, there you go. I'm just going to live. It's practically my same life as long as I have my desktop with me.
Big fan of that. I'm big fan of that. So we're going to get to your last match in a moment. Just talk through some of the places that you do work now then where people can find you. So you're at Fightful where you and Sean Ross Sapp have a delightful relationship that always brings me joy to watch online. How do you and Sean get together?
I don't even remember like who exactly. So, oh my God, I got to give this person like a huge thank you. So like someone tagged me in one of Sean's posts a while back. He was looking for a Raw co-host and I didn't really know Sean at all. Like I didn't know him. Like we didn't know each other and someone tagged me and you know, me, I'm always, you know, willing to do whatever it takes. So I reached out to him and I was like, hey, I heard you're looking for a Raw host. This is me. This is what I do. I sent him my YouTube channel. I sent him my demo reel. I sent him my resume. I told him I worked with the podcast. He already knew who I was. I was like, dang, Sean knows everything. He really knows everything. And I was like, okay, well, you already know who I am. So that's great. And so he was like, let's do it. And so we started doing the show. And then it just like progressively just like got better and better. And, you know, you just develop a friendship over the years. And that's pretty much what happened there. So, yeah, I do the Fightful stuff. I do the Observer stuff, which is my show three times a week, Speak Now Pro Wrestling. And that's my solo show, which has been like, it's my baby. It's really my baby. It's my the best thing that's happened to me.
And what and a great then, honor as well to be connected to like an establishment like Wrestling Observer. Was that was that something again that you created? Was that an opportunity that you created, Denise? Was that something?
I'll tell you how that came about.
Tell me how that came about.
So I was always a fan of theirs. You know, I'd been listening to them for years. You know, like years, right? And so then, like I always wanted to work with them, but I was like, oh, there's no shot, right? Ain't gonna happen, right? I met them at the New Japan show in Long Beach, and I just went up to them and I was like, hey, hi, whatever, right? And then afterwards, I finally got up the courage to send Brian an email, and I was like, okay, like, this is who I am. This is what my experience. This is what I would like to do. And, you know, like, I just asked, like, if there's any opportunities for me whatsoever, I'll take whatever I can get. So, yeah, I emailed Brian and I told him, you know, everything I had to offer and if there was anything for me. And then after that, I got connected to Tony, and then we kind of talked for a little bit, but nothing really happened. So I just kind of kept going. I just kept emailing them and I kept sending them links of my work. For a full year, I was just sending them links of my work and I would send them press releases and all of that stuff. And then one day, out of nowhere, out of the blue, I get an email from Tony and he's like, hey, we want to do something with you. And I was like, okay. And we jump on a call and, you know, we brainstorm some ideas. And then about 2 weeks later, I had a show, had everything done, had brand new equipment brought to me. And then that's kind of how that kind of went down. But it was like consistency. Like, I think they wanted to see that I was consistent.
They needed to see that you were going to stick around and do it. This wasn't just like, I'll do it for a few weeks and I'll get bored. Like, they wanted to see that you could actually carry on.
Exactly. And so that made me really happy. And, you know, I'm like the first woman that's had a show on there, like my own solo show. So that's been like pretty like, I like to brag about that. That's
as you should. Okay. So we got Fightful, we got Sports Talk, we got Wrestling Observer. We'll mention Wrestle Talk.
Wrestle Talk as well. Yeah, I do a weekly show with Luke Owen, who's been like the kindest person that I've ever met. And we've developed a really nice friendship there too. So we do that show on Friday. And then on top of that, I have my YouTube channel, which is Instincts Culture, which is my baby. And that's like really just like, I'm really trying to grow that. And that's really, that's my baby right there. And then on top of that, I take outside work.
So you do, there's plenty going on, as I think we've discovered over the last hour or so we've spoken. We're going to get to your third and final match then, Denise. So we've had Kobashi and Samoa Joe from Ring of Honor. We had the Luchas versus Santana Ortiz from Impact. What's your third and final one going to be, Denise Salcido?
All right. My third and final one is going to be the TLC match from WrestleMania 17, Edge and Christian, the Dudleys and the Hardy Boys. And that's because that match really, in my opinion, set the tone, set the... Man, it really just moved tag team wrestling to another level. It like made the TLC match, in my opinion, and special meaning for me. That was the first WrestleMania I ever watched live. So WrestleMania 17 was my first WrestleMania where like we had a party. I was, you know, in the living room watching. And so like for me, it has like a special memory. And I had I bought the VHS afterwards. I got the WrestleMania 17 VHS. And then I also had the TLC VHS. So I kind of would watch like those together because I didn't have very many VHSs.
What's a moment from that match this day?
Jesus.
Well, I know there's a lot.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, we already know the iconic like Edge spear on Jeff Hardy. That was great, you know, and all of the big spots that they did with the tables. And I rewatched that one this morning, too. And but for me, I think going back to that period in time, I was a big fan of Lita, like a big fan. So when she came out, I was like, oh, my God, Lita's coming out and Lita's there. Oh, my God. And, you know, she gets in the ring and she does her thing. And I was just like freaking out over it. So like back then, that was my favorite part, was when Lita came out and she was incorporated into all of this. And now it's more so of like just seeing, for me now, it's more of some like a symbolism thing of what I think that match means. And so that's been like the for me, that like, yeah, there's different layers to like to that match, which is why I wanted to add it to my list.
Amazing. Great choice for a third and final match. Let's see, where can we find you? Because I could genuinely talk with you all night. And it's been really, I think what's been nice is for people to hear like behind Denise on the YouTube, like then just hearing like how much you actually do and how far you actually go. Where can people find you online? I know we said quite a few places already, but on your socials and stuff, where are you at there?
YouTube.com/Denise Salcedo. That's the place to go. Like seriously, I'm about to hit 50K. Oh my gosh, I'm only like a couple hundred subscribers away. It's terribly annoying. But I'm almost there. And then Twitter, because that's where I share everything. So Twitter @_Denise Salcedo, and then Instagram @_Denise Salcedo, and then TikTok @_Denise Salcedo.
How you getting on with TikTok?
I used to be really popular on TikTok, but then I kind of stopped, and I was live streaming there for 3 years. No, 3 years. Yeah. I think 3 years for 3 years. I was working with an entertainment company, so I would do that. And I developed quite a nice following there. I got like over 100K followers. It was great, but I got burned out. I wasn't as interested. So I left. And so that kind of like fizzled out for a bit, but now I'm back.
There you go. There you go. Findings on the nonsense that is TikTok. We're trying it, Cultaholic. I think I'm the only one that's really giving it any umph. I'm just saying, lads, it's just me at the moment posting silly bollocks mainly. Your final question. So the final question, I'd like to end on this. So we go back. Let's take Denise back now to that TV station. You've walked in, blonde hair, and you're being told, you need, you know, this isn't a good look. You don't work here. This isn't for you, kid. What would you like to tell that version of Denise would put her in good stead going forward?
Run the hell out of there and start your dang YouTube channel already, girl. What the hell are you waiting for? Talk about what you love. Do your own thing. Get out. Run.
Run. Run as far away as you can.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
For all the wrestling headlines in just 10 minutes, search Cultaholic Wrestling News on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts from.